Sports Talk New York with your hosts Mark Rosenman and AJ Carter. Sports Talk New York is sponsored in part by Prince Associates, Send in the Clowns, the Phoenix Tube Company, CelebrityTrips.com, the law firm of Decalator Cohen and DePrisco, Solomon Jewelers, and Relish Restaurant of Kings Park. Here are your hosts, Mark and AJ.
Joining us now is one of our favorite guests, as well as one of the nicest guys in the industry. He began his career broadcasting at MSG Varsity, later moving on to MSG, where he served as the host of MSG's 150 during New York Knicks and New York Rangers telecast. He joined SNY in 2013. His first assignment involved covering a Brooklyn Cyclones game for the network. For the 2014 season, he filled in for Kevin Burkhart for 50 games, leading him to replacing Burkhart beginning at the 2015 New York Mets season. And when Burkhart left for Fox Sports, he won the Syracuse Press Club Award for Best Radio Sports Feature and has been nominated for 4 New York Emmys, including Sports Anchor of the Year in 2012. It is great to welcome Steve Gelbs back to WLIE Sports Talk New York. Welcome, Stevie.
Mark, I got to tell you, buddy, I will come on your show every week just to get that introduction. You give the most thorough introduction of anyone that I know. I love it.
That's because it takes the place of a question that Mark has forgotten.
Right, we fill for time.
He fills time.
You know, so it's interesting because Ken Davidoff had a great article. It's probably 3 weeks ago now. He pointed out the Mets added zero players who provided value to another major league team in 2016. Tom Grugliani, whom they signed to a minor league deal, registered 0.5 wins above replacement for the Indians. So barring a big trade prior to opening day, the Mets will be the first playoff team in the wild card era to try to return to October without acquiring a single reinforcement of value from the outside. I guess the flip side is they'll have a full season of Jay Bruce, a full season of Jose Reyes. They're going to get innings out of Zach Wheeler. More games from, well, we don't know about David Wright. Yeah. They also lost Bartolo Colon, James Loney, Kelly Johnson. We don't know, you know,
he'll be back on the trade deadline.
Probably.
You just know that.
Are you surprised that the Mets did not try to bring in anyone from the outside, seeing that historically that has not been a formula for returning to a World Series?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a great question, and I'm going to answer it one way, but I'm going to explain why I think it was the right move the other way. I am surprised, okay? But I'm more surprised just because, forget about, you know, a team trying to get back to the playoffs or any of those statistics that you just mentioned. I'm surprised just because in sports, forget about even Major League Baseball, it's just incredibly, incredibly rare to return essentially the exact same team, which the Mets have done. But on the flip side, I commend them for doing it. And the reason why is that they experienced, as you know, just an unimaginable amount of injuries last year. You know, one that, to be honest with you, it was a season where I actually think it was even there should be more of a sense of accomplishment, I should say, that they just made the wild card game last year than even the year before when they made the World Series, because they had almost nothing, at least with what we thought the season was going to be. So for me, I thought it was interesting that this front office was able to take a step back and say to themselves, wait a second, a year ago, spring training, we were convinced that we had enough to win the World Series. We went out, we signed Neil Walker, we signed Asdrubal Cabrera. Then in midseason, you know, you acquire Jose Reyes, you acquire Jay Bruce. We thought we had enough before the season started. Everything went haywire with the injuries. Now we reset. We bring back essentially the same team, but a healthy team, hopefully. And that's one thing you can never – I mean, that's just a crapshoot. You don't know who's going to be healthy, whether or not you bring guys in. But you bring back the same team that you thought was good enough last year with a couple of midseason reinforcements. Why are they not good enough to do it this year? And to me, what allowed them the freedom – to not add anybody was the fact that last year when everybody went down, there were all these players in the organization that stepped up that nobody really expected to be there. And all of a sudden there was this depth on this team that last year we thought they didn't have, that they do have in the organization. And now they can go into the season with a lot of guys that played key roles on last year's run to the playoffs, now as reserves, now as guys that are are in the bank, in the back pocket, should injuries arise, and you expect that the injuries won't be the same as they were last year. So it's a long-winded way of saying, yeah, I'm surprised they didn't do it because everybody does it, but I think it was the right move. I really commend their patience and their ability to step back and say, we should have enough if everybody's healthy.
You know, that's a key question, though, Steve, and you raised a point there. They're putting a lot of faith in the fact that you have people with bad backs, and backs can be tricky, who'll come back and have full seasons. Lucas Duda, Neil Walker, and to some extent, you know, David Wright's back, neck, it's the whole host of things. And what is that really, you know, really a big
realistic,
a big risk to say, hey, you're dealing with people who have conditions. It's not just somebody, you know, broke a leg sliding into a bag. It's people who have conditions that have a history of recurring. And is the question that, are they that, you know, confident that they can fill it with what they have in the farm system?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. They don't need to fill it with what they have in the farm system. And that's what's incredible about the way that they've set this team up. And, listen, David Wright, I think what the Mets have been doing publicly is they're showing him the respect that he deserves. He's earned it, right? He deserves, if he's healthy, to get a shot at being the starting third baseman for this team. But the difference between this year and last year is that last year it was his job, and they didn't really have a strong contingency for the inevitability of that back acting up and what we eventually saw was a neck injury that who knows if it had, you know, if it was a side effect of the back injury to begin with. This year they're not going into it expecting David Wright to be their third baseman. If he's healthy, they're going to give him the shot. But quite frankly, they expect that he's probably not going to be around. They're going into the season with the expectation that anything David Wright gives them is a bonus. So, you know, Jose Reyes has become that insurance policy, not in the past a Danny Muno or somebody from the minor leagues. Jose Reyes is that insurance policy right now. And when it comes to Lucas Duda, I think that we're going to have to see, if Duda can play a full season because he's already had, even though he's looked good the last couple of days and he says he's feeling good again, having two cortisone injections in your hips early in spring is not a good sign. But that being said, the backup you have for against lefties, you've got a guy like Wilmer Flores to play first base. But in addition, let's say that Lucas Duda does go out, and I know there are question marks about whether or not Jay Bruce can play first, but now your backup is Jay Bruce going to first base and Michael Conforto playing right field.
Have you seen Jay Bruce at all? Have you seen how he looks at first base?
Yeah, well, I've seen him. I've seen him take some ground balls, and I actually was speaking to Terry Collins a little bit today on one of the backfields. Listen, Jay Bruce, there is no immediate plan for Jay Bruce to be the first baseman right now, right? They're going to give him a lot of work there to make sure that he could do it eventually. I'll probably get into down the road a minor league game or two, down here in camp. No need to put him out there in major league game as he's trying to learn the position. But the one thing that Terry was saying is that he actually has some pretty good hands, that he was surprised to see how natural he was as an infielder with his hands. And he actually likes the way that he throws to second base, that he's got this sidearm delivery, pardon me, that he can throw the baseball that, as you know, a first baseman, that's pretty important that when they're trying to turn a double play that they can get around that base runner. So, listen, there are no illusions about, Jay Bruce coming in here and being a gold glove first baseman. But, again, the difference is that in the past they had no options really that were established big-time major leaguers to fill these roles. And now they've essentially got, let's say everybody's healthy, right? Let's say everybody on the infield's healthy. They have six established starting infielders for four spots, right?
Right.
They've got, in the outfield, if Jay Bruce has to move to first base, you've got a kid, Michael Conforto, who, by the way, looks spectacular so far in spring training, to play in right field. So I just think that what they've done is they, for the most part, have a pretty versatile group and a pretty deep group of established major leaguers, some who have, an all-star pedigree, whereas in the past, you had a lot of guys that, they wanted to talk up as depth players, but really were the AAA, the Quad A players, your Danny Munoz, your Eric Campbells. It's a different breed of player than they have right now to fill those roles when inevitably the injuries do occur.
You know, What's also interesting, we mentioned how they didn't bring in a player of value, but sometimes the little moves that go under the radar sometimes have the biggest impact. And the move I'm talking about is Tim Tuffel is no longer on the big league coaching staff. I know Tim was a huge influence on helping Wilmer Flores adjust to multiple positions in the infield. He was a very good influence on Walker and Cabrera. He worked tirelessly with the infielders. Now you bring in a new third base coach. Glenn Sherlock is a third base coach, but he's also going to work with the catchers. And is this one of those little things that goes unnoticed but might have a huge impact and maybe tap into what we've seen for years as the untapped potential in Travis d'Arnaud?
Listen, it might have gone unnoticed publicly, but this did not go unnoticed within the organization in terms of the players, in terms of the rest of the coaching staff, in terms of the media and people that follow, you know, baseball from the inside. On one hand, I think it was, you know, everybody's sad to see a guy like Tim Tuffel go because he was a really well-liked guy. But in terms of just the addition of Glenn Sherlock, he has a tremendous, tremendous reputation around the major leagues. And it's clear in speaking with the catchers this year that one thing they definitely missed last year was having a catching coach on the staff after Bob Guerin left the year prior to go, to Los Angeles to be the bench coach there. Last year they had nobody, and so they were really on their own. And for this particular crop, whether you're talking about a Travis d'Arnaud or Kevin Pawlecki, these young catchers that the Mets are really trying to develop, they really need someone like this. And early on, the reviews have been fantastic. We have to see it, of course, in games. But, Travis d'Arnaud worked a lot with Glenn Sherlock this offseason. They pinpointed a couple of things in his throwing that that he thinks he can fix, that he thinks he has fixed. Terry Collins actually said he was watching Travis throw this morning and thought, you know, he was throwing fantastically well. Again, even Terry will admit this, though, you know, we have to see it in games, and we have to see it consistently. But I think that move could end up paying huge dividends down the line. We have to see it, but just based on the people you speak with, not just in the Mets organization, but around the league, that's a big hire. And we'll see if it can really – because, if it can help Travis d'Arnaud, if Travis d'Arnaud can become, you know, the catcher that pitchers want to throw to – the catcher that at least can average, not he doesn't need to be crazy, but throw out on average a decent number of base runners, and then he can get, you know, the hitting side down and become the guy. That X factor for this team is huge. I mean, the upside for this team is huge if he eventually becomes the guy that a lot of people in the organization still think he can become.
We're talking to Steve Gelbs of SNY, if you just tuned in. Mets fans all talk, and we get giddy when we talk about the big five starters. It's interesting because the guy's name that started way before the Matt Harveys and the DeGroms was a guy by the name of Rafael Montero. How has he looked in camp, and is there any possible role that Rafael Montero can earn on this squad, given the success of Gesellman and Lugo last season? Where is Montero in the depth chart right now for the New York Mets?
You know, it's a very good question because he actually has looked pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, he's certainly had flashes like this before. It's about right. Consistency. He was at one point he was ahead of the ground.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He was the number one pitching prospect at one point. Yeah.
At one point.
The talent is there, and yeah, I think there's an opening. I mean, the bullpen is not solidified, especially at the start of the season when there's an assumption that Familia is not going to be there. So could I see him earning a potential spot in the bullpen? It's possible. I wouldn't rule it out entirely. I wouldn't also say that, you know, I'd bet the house on it. But I do think that I think that there was at least a chance that there was a wake-up call last year when they didn't just send him to AAA, but then they demoted him back to AA, if you remember.
Yeah.
And so it really was his, you know, hey, I could be out of this thing pretty quickly. I got to figure it out. So, for the Mets' sake, hopefully he can he can salvage his career a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried him out in the bullpen. I also wouldn't be surprised if he had a great camp, if they sent him down to AAA and had him as one of their stretched-out starters. I mean, you're assuming that, or I'm assuming anyway, that Robert Selman's going to be the fifth starter at a camp. I think there's a decent chance that they'll, you know, maybe have an extended spring for Zach Wheeler or something like that as a way to make sure he's ready and limit his innings a little bit. But in that case, you know, maybe Seth Lugo comes out of the bullpen. Maybe he's stretched out down in AAA, but you're going to need some guys that are stretched out. We saw how badly the Mets need stretched out pitchers last year. So maybe that's Rafael Montero in AAA. Maybe he's, you know, right behind Lugo and Gesellman when camp breaks in terms of starting pitching. But that guy, I will never make a prediction about what Rafael Montero is going to be.
Not a bad problem to have. It's interesting, you know, everything we talk about David Wright, this has been an ongoing theme for the last 3 years in spring training. Just real quick, if you were a betting man and the under-over was 80 games for David Wright this season, which would you go under or over?
I mean, it's so, you know, it probably, listen, he's played 75 games in the last 2 years, right. So... you know, to say, is he going to play over 80 this year? It's a tough thing to say. If you had to go over under, that you would choose the over. The only thing, and I repeatedly say, anybody that asks me about David Wright, I have the same stock answer because it's true. If anybody can do it, if anybody can overcome these things, it's him, based on how hard he works. That being said, his body has clearly been betraying him, and there's no way around that. So, you know, I know we're not supposed to root as media members. I root for him. I root for him to find a way back and find a way to stay at least semi-consistently on the field. I think he deserves it, quite frankly, after all the lean years that he, you know, was here for and really was the face of the franchise for as long as he was. He deserves to share in the success that's going on right now. I also think there's a strong need for him in the clubhouse. I think that's something that's not overrated. So hopefully this is just a minor setback with the throwing, but it's very difficult to predict anything with David because these ailments have become far too regular, and obviously that back injury is not going away ever. So you hope, but you don't count on.
We're talking with Steve Gelbs of SNY. The interesting thing about David Wright and the domino effects it has on the Mets, if he's not healthy, then obviously plan A is Jose Reyes at third base. And Jose brings a dimension that the Mets have not had pretty much since Jose Reyes left the team after the 2011
like
season.
Like speed and excitement on the bases. Right.
I love Jose. Any Met fan obviously loves Jose. But I'm just wondering if the organization is overvaluing his worth. And what I mean by that is if Wright is not healthy, Reyes plays third base. And if he plays third base, it's at the expense of a 25-year-old Wilmer Flores. Reyes, the last two seasons.
I knew you were heading to Will. Anything.
Well,
you've
because,
been on the Wilmer's.
Because this is. I value.
Bandwagon
I think,
for how many years?
I've been on his bandwagon. And unfortunately, we've never got to see what he can do over a full season. But here, just statistically, you know, Reyes over the last two seasons, he had 267 and 259 respectively. Flores hit 267, 263. Reyes had 15 home runs in the last two seasons, albeit, you know, shortened seasons due to suspension and such. Wilmer had 32. I love Jose, but he's 33 years old, and he may not be the force he is on the base pass. So are the Mets organization overvaluing what Jose brings to the team?
I don't think so. I saw it firsthand last year. If you asked me who was the key last season, it was Jose Reyes, honestly. And, you know, I know that they wouldn't have been where they were without Seth Lugo and without Robert Gesellman, and certainly not without a healthy Yoenis Cespedes. But Jose Reyes brought something to this team last year that they did not have, and they still don't have without him. And that's a true leadoff hitter, someone that can at least give the opposition something to think about on the base paths. And in large part, I think what you saw from Asdrubal Cabrera the second half of the season especially was based on what Jose Reyes was doing. And that's not because I'm just, you know, throwing things out there. That's based on what Asdrubal Cabrera kept telling me, that every time that Jose Reyes got on first base in front of him, Asdrubal Cabrera all of a sudden started seeing a steady stream of fastballs. because guys didn't want to throw a curveball and have Reyes go, and they were worried about him at first base. And so even though I think he only stole 9 bases last year, and even though he's not the guy that he once was, you know, when he came over last year, I think David Wright still had the team lead in stolen bases with 3. So it's something that they need, and he brings an energy that you can't truly understand unless you're really around it and in the clubhouse on a daily basis. It's a tangible thing. In regards to Wilmer Flores, you know, those statistics are fair, right? But one thing that you also saw from Flores, especially last year, is that the Mets and Terry Collins started putting him in a position where he was really going to do some damage. And he's a guy that has become elite against left-handed pitching. So I think what the Mets organization believes and what baseball is starting to really move towards is that platoons are not bad. And I think in an ideal world, the Mets view Wilmer Flores more as a platoon guy that will mash lefties and then supplement him with someone that can hit righties as well.
I'm fine with that.
You know, I honestly think that, like, in their ideal scenario this year, you know, you assume that Lucas Duda is healthy and you have Duda play every game against the righty and Flores play every game against the lefty. I mean, I really, you know, I see it as almost a straight platoon there. So, and plus with all these, you know, again, like you mentioned, Reyes' age, they are going to, especially if David Wright's not there, they're going to really try to get Wilmer Flores playing time across the infield because, you know, Neil Walker and Azulio Cabrera, they played so much the first half of last year out of necessity, and you saw their bodies break down towards the end. The Mets do not want to do that again this year. So I think the answer lies somewhere in between. I don't think the Mets overvalue Jose Reyes, and in terms of what they're paying him, it's a ridiculous value for what he's going to bring.
Absolutely. Plus the money they get from every game that Wright doesn't play as well. It's a jackpot for the insurance.
Right. But I also just think that, you know, Wilmer Flores has shown that he can be really valuable against left-handed pitching, and they're going to put him in a position to succeed there. If he can ever, you know, I don't know if he's going to get the consistent playing time enough to prove that he can do it against righties, but if he does and he proves he can do it against righties at some point, you know, then the conversation's different. But in terms of both defense and you know, the other dynamic things that Reyes can do, I don't think that they overvalue him over a guy like Flores at third.
Steve, I know that you squeezed us in your busy schedule. I know you have someplace to go, and we'd like to get you because we have like 30 more Met questions we'd like to get to. So we'd like to have you on, you know, before the season starts. But lastly, before I let you go, I'm privileged enough to get just a glimpse of how you go about your work. I was lucky enough to watch you do some of your interviews with the players about their gloves and how they break them in, which then got broken down into several segments over the course of several games on SNY. So, you know, just real quickly, give our listeners a glimpse into the Steve Gelb's day. How you come up with that segment? You know, did you pitch it? And then how you go about collecting all that information, which gets disseminated over a course of a homestand, you know, when you're watching at home?
Yeah. No, it's. I mean, it's. I think it's probably pretty interesting for people that you know, just to kind of get an idea and a look into it. You know, the game itself is a tiny portion of the job. You know, the game itself, in a lot of respects, is far easier than anything else you have to do. But, I mean, generally, just a day in, day out for me is, you know, let's just do a regular 7 o'clock game at home. You know, I'm up in the morning, and usually, you know, you'll sleep in until 9:30, 10 o'clock as you get back late. And generally, I spend probably, I don't know, 2 to 3 hours, depending on the day, prepping for that night. And a lot of that is reading everything that is written about the Mets, reading a lot about what's written about the opposing team, and reading a lot just about baseball in general and trying to come up with general trends throughout the game. Then I go to the clubhouse. It's open at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I spend the next, you know, 3+ hours just trying to gather a lot of different information from the players. In terms of how I come up with what I'm trying to say on the air, you know, I generally, it was actually Kevin who told me that he viewed his job as a success anytime he could get the booth talking about something. if he presented something and then the booth had a conversation about it, he knew it was a successful hit. And for me, when you have a booth that's as knowledgeable as Gary, Keith, and Ron, which for my money is the most knowledgeable booth in baseball, you need to figure out what can I bring to the table that they can't, that they won't. So I try and look into, I try and take, you know, my point of view, which is being in there, being around these guys on a daily basis, and I try and bring out the different things that they wouldn't cover necessarily. So, you know, yeah, there'll be certain things about the way a hitter is approaching this week after being in a slump or something that I can get, but I let Gary, Keith, and Ron, especially Keith and Ron, break down the baseball because, you know, they know it better than I can and better than I ever will. So what can I bring that will be fun, that will be different? That thing about the gloves, my producer had pitched as an idea. He loves the idea of equipment. I think it's really cool. One of the things, honestly, that I've been focused on in spring is having about 10 to 15-minute conversations one-on-one in the dugout, off-camera, with as many players as I can, trying to get their background and the perspective that I want to take is, you know, all of us, and I know you, Mark, you still go down to fantasy camp, right? All of us played baseball at one point in our life. All of us were them at one point in our life. They didn't start out as superstars, right?
Right.
Something happened. Something was different about each one of them that along the way, they became so much better than every one of their peers. And generally, it's an overriding passion that most people can't understand, this drive to continue to pursue and push and push harder and push harder when no one's watching. So I like to get the perspective of what they did that a lot of kids didn't do. And it's been fascinating, honestly. Like, it's been, I'm actually looking forward to telling as many of these as I can, because it's been really interesting to hear, just what these guys were like as kids when they were realizing that this passion and this talent, if they pushed it and pushed it hard, could lead to what it eventually led to. So, you know, that's the type of stuff I think about. And it's great and it's challenging. But I have, honestly, probably one of the coolest jobs in the world. And I don't take for granted that I have access to, a group of people that most people wish they had access to. So I try and think from a fan's perspective, what would they like to know that they don't already know, and go from there.
You know, the beauty for me is that when I'm not out at the Citi Field covering the game, that I'm just as comfortable watching and getting information from Steven. And I feel bad, like, in games when he, like, does some of these segments, I'll, like, text him, like, wow, that was awesome. And I hold back a lot of the times, like, because I don't want to bother you. But
just disturb him while he's working.
Exactly.
That's it,
but really, but great stuff, and we're looking forward to another great season of Mets baseball.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon, all right?
You got it. Steve Gelbs of SNY.